was this an intimidating project? Did you ever feel at times like you wished you had had more experience going into this?
First of all, I'm not so young, but I thank you. I thank you. Did I feel intimidated? In the very beginning, I did, yes, in the very beginning. In the first years when we were looking around Czechoslovakia and shooting there, and it was a bit overwhelming, but, you know, I felt that I learned very quickly, and it soon became a lot easier. I just loved it. I mean, it was all out of love, actually.
The weight of the overhead, the location shooting, yeah. the amount that adds to a budget. That must have been intimidating, too.
Well, but there were a lot of us and a lot of help. I mean, Harvey helped, and the studio helped, and eventually, you know, it became easier and easier to handle, easier to make. You know, as you get going, we tried to be very prepared. We had 4 months of pre-production. Actually, we had prepared also a year before that in England. So all that preparation made it easier to handle.
We asked this of Mr. Donner. What did you think watching the audience as well as the movie last night?
What did I think? I thought that they were especially attentive. There weren't as many laughs as I had hoped for. You know, there were chuckles, but basically I thought it went pretty well. What'd you think?
Well, I'm asking you because yeah. I would think that would be very nerve-wracking.
Are you kidding me?
Nail-grinding to watch that audience now and think, what's going to happen?
Gee, it really is. I got to tell you, it's really, really difficult. The most difficult thing is to stay there with an audience in the very beginning and watch it. And you know, because, my God, what if they throw tomatoes at the screen?
Yeah. Who was that audience?
Who was that audience? It was all of you.
There were a lot of younger people there.
We wanted to see how it would play with younger people, too. I mean, it was a little bit for us. What we wanted music that was true to the integrity of the movie and yet accessible. We decided to take a chance. We're going to just gamble and make an experiment, and we just decided that we didn't want normal movie music and we didn't want classical music. So we decided that the Alan Parsons Project had this sound, had that classical sound, and yet maybe more accessible to today's audiences.
And did you then direct it toward a younger audience and hope to tie that in with the music?
It was in our minds, certainly, yes. Certainly was in our minds. You know, not to, as I say, get away from the integrity of the movie, but we felt that also all the energy in that music would match the energy on the screen. The Alan Parsons Project was recommended to us a long time ago, actually by Alan Hirschfeld, when we had our first meeting at Fox, 20th Century Fox. And we went through many different ideas, and we found ourselves constantly searching for a sound like the Alan Parsons Project. And finally we thought, well, what are we doing? Why don't we go right to the source? Of many different layers, and the initial layer, the way that they made it, was with laces. So everyday rugger gets in this costume, and they laced him in all the way up and down his back, and then they laced on those gloves. Then they put on this very heavy over tunic, in an over tunic, I guess you have to call it, laced that on also, and then his cape.
Gee, what if you have to go to the bathroom?
That was a problem.
Knights don't have to go to the bathroom.
It was hot. Oh, it was hot. Also, Ken Hutchison, who plays the Marquet, one day he put his costume on and he said, feel this. He put it over my head. Well, first of all, it was made on suede, but heavy, thick suede. And then all those chains. That must have weighed 20 pounds. Literally, he put it on and I sat down. It was heavy and it was hot, yes. Because, mind you, we started filming in August. August and September, August in Italy. Now, we were smart, we went north, but it was still hot. It was.
I think that...
We were not permitted to see you really open up very much initially.
Well... I mean, there's only so much time in a two-hour film to do so many things, and I think that Philippe's character is much more lively, and he's a little thief, and he's, you know, kind of Houdini-like and kind of wild, and I think that the feeling of the period. I know for my character, I can't really speak for Rutger, but is a lot more formal. And I think in giving it, you know, that kind of style, you can't get, I didn't want to get too loose with it because I didn't want to make it too contemporary.
Yeah.
And so it's that fine line of not letting it get too stylized. And at the same time, because of the language and because we tried to do we didn't want to do an English accent, however, we wanted to do a sort of nondescript good English.
In other words, the less we noticed it, the better.
Right, right. We didn't want it to sound like anything. We didn't want it to sound like I'm from California or I'm from England. To be kind of timeless, and that was the feeling that I felt we were going for.
How much of what you're telling us then was part of what you worked out with Mr. Donner?
All of it,
yeah,
is the choice that we made, and I guess a lot of it were just sort of unstated character choices that I had made. The feeling of this woman was a lady her whole life. And even though she's been living in the woods for 2 years, there's her culture will never leave her,
yeah.
You know. And whereas Philippe grew up in the dungeons his whole life, so his whole being is going to be different.
Well, it's an effective contrast. I was just wondering how much of that had been really planned out at the time.
I think that it's if I were to be able to do it over, I would like to have not done it so much that way, but that's the way it developed.
What drew you to the project? Like, this is apart from the project.
Let me say that I don't like to say too much about it because I'd like for people to go and discover it for themselves. But I will say that she's the closest character that I played to myself, being it's not period, it's contemporary, being she's my same age. She's from she lives in Los Angeles. I was very excited about being able to bring more of myself, just little nuances about myself to this character than I ever have been able to do before. And what else can I say about Into the Night? It was a great working experience for me. It was the best time I've ever had working on a film. Ever. And I think you can see it in my performance, the freedom there. And it showed me you don't have to be intense and neurotic to be a great, you know, to be at your best.
Is that what you would have thought?
Of course. Yeah, I love it.
I told you weren't, you were.
Well, no, but this is a film, this is my first really real American hero, or real hero for America. Osterman wasn't really doing it, so that's it. And I've been doing it in Europe. mind you, heroes, in my opinion, are divided in two. One has substance and the other one doesn't. Now, I'd like to just stick with the guys who have some guts and substance. A hero is hard to play because you have to be right. You know, you have to do what is right, and who the hell knows what is right? So, but I take great pleasure in it, and I have some heroes that I still want to play.
Oh.
Can't tell you.
No secret?
Yeah.
I was going to say something.
But, you know, what I like to do is surprise my audience a little bit. So I'm not really staying on the same road. I just like a few bends in it and just tease them a little bit, play around with them. So I'm not going to go for the solid goal from here on. I'm going to go a little bit like that.
What's interesting, among other things, that your hero is so convinced he's right that he sometimes doesn't listen to reason in this particular
This is, of course, what happens, yes. Yeah.
Although I don't know if somebody saying that a day would ever end or a night would ever end sounds reasonable anyway, come to think of it.
Yeah. Well, night without a day without a night. It's the dawn. It's dawning, you know. They're nice. I love those images, you know. It's so much bigger than life. And although you may find it a little too much, it's still, there's a niceness about it. And what I like in the film is that we're able to get kind of real reality from the people to the people. We really relate very human. You know, we're not real heroes or kings walking around the woods. We need sleep and we touch and we smile and we have our little quarrels. So it's I don't know, I'm very excited about this film.
At the same time, working with the animals probably helps keep your own perspective on just how big or little you are in reality.
Yeah, sure. Richard Donner was about talking that. About the business of the horse, the hawk, and the costume.
Well, you can imagine that there's, you have these egos in the shot that don't listen to reason. They just go and perform whatever they feel like. And you have to just rely on them and be with them instead of, of course, if they walk out of the shot, there's nothing you can do.
No matter how good you are, if the animal's not good, that's it, right?
But I even had a great relationship with my princess, Lady Hawk, on my arm. She would look at me when you would really hope, please give me one look, and she would turn around and go, huh? Which is more than you can ask for, because I'm good with animals. I probably am a wolf, you know, somewhere.
Well, was there a hawk handler who...
Yeah, sure. There were four different hawks. One could fly, one could sit. One was kind of a double for the other one, if the other one would get sick or, you know, get obnoxious. And then there was another one. And there was one that really liked me. And we didn't use him a lot, because what he would do was he would get so comfortable on my arm that he would stick out all his feathers, and he would look like a chicken, like a round ball. You know, imagine a hawk sitting there like... So we kind of got rid of him. One of the things that really was nice is that they... When they fly towards you, they really grab your arm, and it's really like... It's not like, hold on to me. No, it's not like he's holding on to you, but it's like, I got you. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's really, and it's a real power that gets,
especially,
you know.
Considering they've got talent.
Yeah.
However, I assume they were kept blunted or something.
They sat around. They sat around on the... You mean where they stayed, the hawks?
The claws themselves. They must have been blunted.
No, no,
cut
no.
Or something.
No. No.
You said you were also wolf.
Yeah.
Lupa.
What about
the wolf?
What aspect?
predatory aspect, the independent, the animals of the...
Well, I don't know. You can do it. I mean, you can fill that in yourself. You know, there are wonderful images that the lady is a hawk and that she's the moon and the guy is a wolf and he's the sun. I mean, it's a wolf is known for its fate, for its how do you say, faithfulness. I mean, he will go, and it's nice. I mean, there's some of that in the man too. I don't know. It's just an image, I guess.
Have you always ridden horses?
I've been riding a horse since I was 12. Mm. Yeah. And I've been fencing also.
But have you ever ridden them wearing armor before?
No, of course, that's a little difficult. I mean, you know, it's a little difficult when you have to ride a horse. I've never really been able... The way European horses are trained is different. I mean, riding a quarter horse is much, much easier. You know, you just go, and it's wonderful. I mean, I prefer that way of riding much better than the European way. European way, you can't do anything with the reins. You have to do it with your legs. And the horse is very sensitive. All the mounting, what do you call it?
Mounting.
All the mounting that he did was not meant. I mean, it was not meant to happen.
Oh, when he was rearing up?
When he was rearing up.
Oh, really?
Oh. I was just sitting there like, oh, I've never done this before. And I'm just, you know, we'll see what happens. It was,
oh my.
Yeah, it was exciting.
Uh-huh.
Because, yeah, it was exciting. But it was... He's a big horse, that horse. He's a stallion, too. And he's very sweet.
What'd you learn to fence?
Acting school, basically. Before acting school, I had some fencing, just as a hobby, because I liked it. And I don't know, I like it, because it's a kind of a... Fencing is like dancing a little bit, and I like that, you know? I like... There's no fight in a film that is not like a dance. A fight is not just banging someone on the head or the hip or the what. There's a kind of a physical music to it, which I like. You know, it's a dance.
What about the choreography of that final combat then? How long did it take you to shoot it?
Well, it took us 10 days to shoot it. The fight, that is, not the rest of it. And I lost 20 pounds.
Really?
On it, yeah.
In 10 days?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, especially those giant broadswords. There must have been some times when you got a little too close to each other with those things.
Really? I must say that I have never fought a scene fencing with such a good opponent. He was so precise and so good. So we were lucky not to fuck up. We really were. But I was the weak factor. I was the weak factor because he was much better than I am in remembering what we were doing. But, you know, when you got to fight and still have to play, I just got lost once in a while. And, of course, then I had stepped out. But I was the one who made the mistakes,
well,
basically.
Unless,
so.
Unless there was very skillful use of doubles, you took some pretty good falls in that, too. It's hard to tell at times.
Yeah, that's right.
Was you?
Well, no, we did the whole fight ourselves.
Yeah.
It's in the film. It's different in the film. I mean, in the film, was very... I was very proud when we finished it, because I know that there are not a lot of actors who can do this. And of course, that's you can be proud of that. We had this Steadicam guy running backwards the whole fight in one take.
You did the whole thing in one take?
The whole,
at one point?
Yeah. Cover. But up to a certain point, I'm not sure which point it is, but it's a long fight. Well, anyway.
Were you concerned in having a career in America that you were getting yourself typecast
as the bad guy, as the heavy? I mean, were you looking to break out of that when this came?
Well, I don't really feel that I got into it, but I got close.
Yeah.
Sure, but I, for instance, they were, when I was doing Nighthawks, which is, you know, was a pretty solid bad guy.
Indeed.
They approached me for The Eye of the Needle, which Mr. Sutherland did. And that is really also a very nice bad guy. Better. But I said, well, forget it. It's, I'm not doing it. So after Nighthawks, I wasn't, and you can have a different opinion, but I don't think Blade Runner's a bad guy at all. You can pick up on it, but I just feel he's really too different to be a bad guy. So already you're a little off the track from whatever. So that's.
Well, he doesn't want to die, which is something all humans can relate to.
No, but if you think about it, the bad guy is. And there are a lot of twists in that script. If you start out having your hero being a sleazy police cop who gets a gun to his head and says, and the guy says, well, if you're not going to shoot those guys, you're going to be lost yourself. That's a very lousy hero, I think. I think you need, for a hero, you need a couple of nice goals. You can sleaze him up and you can make him a little tacky, which is interesting, but still, you need a couple of goals that are kind of nice.
Do you maintain contacts at all with the Dutch film industry? Is that still a part of your career, in that language?
Not really. I'm not avoiding anything. But you know how big this industry is. It's not big at all. It's a very small circle of people. You don't really, you need to keep in contact, but it's not too difficult to do that. If you get flying to this town, you'll get in contact with the people that you need in within 3 days, really, because there's only one hot spot, and it's like a little, a little wind that goes over the place, but it's a very small circle where it happens. So. And you can only do so much, I do my work, and I've done a couple of films. And if people want me, they have to be a little alert. I mean, I really think I can expect them to. You can't just have me just like, easy. You have to get me. I think that border is nice.
A career here in America? Was that always a goal of yours, or was it Soldier of Orange that kind of catapulted you by accident?
Soldier of Orange mentioned it to me, I thought, hey, that's ridiculous. That would be absolutely astonishing. But I said, well, I like languages, and I already was close, I spoke English. I thought, let's not be too. I'll just learn the language as good as I can and make myself available. If it happens, I'm lucky.
You learned it very well. There's an amazing lack of accent there.
Well, I'm still working on it. There's a difference between me talking to you now and me talking in films. In films, you can work on your lines, you can work around them, you can do a little exercise on the things that will slip. And then it's fine, there's no accent at all. But in normal speech, of course, that takes a long time. I think a language never becomes your own if you're not born with it.
How many languages do you speak?
Four and a little Italian.
A friend is a trial. I believe it.
What are they?
French, English, German, Dutch. I have a lot of corners that I picked up. So I can understand. You don't have to write about this, though, because it's tech. But it's a great gift. I pick up languages like, really. I was in Indonesia, I picked it up a little bit. I was in Hungary, I picked it up. In Sweden, I picked it up from the Bergman films. I could understand people when I was in Sweden. Let's say one-fourth. in Italian. I've never learned Italian, but I know, I understand a lot of Italian because the French is close. And Spanish, you know, it's great. It's just great. It's, and I love it. It's just a, it's somewhere in my head. There's a little room.
Yeah.
That wants all the languages.
Has there ever been another Dutch actor who has made quite the transition that you've made, though, from
Per Oscars?
There hasn't. As far as I know, without being. This has never happened before. It has never happened before. Natasha Kinski is as close because she is female.
She's German.
She might be. It's a kind of a mix there, I think.
Yeah.
She's French and German, and Klaus Kinski is in the background. They're denying all of this.
I didn't know. But
it's never happened before.
You were a fairly big star.
This market is dominated by males. Now I'm lucky because there are not many in my league here. I'm really lucky, but still it's dominated by males, male stars. There's been a little period where suddenly a lot of women came in, but now they're forgetting about it again. So to be able, as being an actress, to get into this country and get into films is a possibility that still exists. But to be a male star in this country and not really come from this country is a miracle. I think it is a miracle.
Yeah.
I'll just enjoy it until it lasts.
But it's, among other things, I would think your facility for languages. I mean, Marcello Mastroianni, Del Mondo, people like that they've tried to bring over could not master the language.
Yeah. No, well, okay, I'll take this. The language is a barrier. It's a big cliff, and there are not many people who can make it. You need a very good ear, and you need... You see, America, the language exists of, I think it's about 80,000 words that you can, you know, that's what you need to know. And you need to know how to pronounce it. You do. You can't just learn your lines and think you're acting in a different language. I don't think you can. I mean, I wouldn't try and do it. I refused quite a few films where I felt I cannot do it because it's too... I am not that far language-wise. I mean, when I did Eureka, which was British, not American English, British, and I'm very proud I can do that too, but it takes a lot of work, and it was very verbal. It was a very verbal role. There's a very big courtroom scene in it at the end of the film in a very odd place, so it was a real challenge for me to grasp, you know, try and get it, and I'm proud of that scene. I got it, you know. But you have to know where your limits are. I think it's much better to know where your limits are than where you know what you want to do. I have a drive enough that I'm, you know, I'll try different things.
You're also an extremely powerful looking man. What advantages and limitations does that place upon what roles you can play? You are big and you're strong, which is of great value in Lady Hawk, obviously.
Well, I really don't suffer from it, if you know what I mean. I mean, I don't know. Of course it limits you, but I'll just take what I think. I'm fine. I know I'm limited, and it's not because of my looks. I know that I can't do a lot of things. And it doesn't mean that I won't risk my head, because you've got to stop me from risking my head every time.
It's very believable, for example, when at one point you just parry a sword with your own hand. It's one of the biggest laughs of the evening, as a matter of fact. Remember that? We believe that you can do that somehow.
Sure.
Hey, showtime.
I can't think of very many other actors that might have tried that where there would have been much credibility.
Matt
to that.
Dillon couldn't have done that.
Well, I'll try and stick within my range and a little across, I mean, a little further. But, and that's more than enough, really, to get off on.
He does bring up a very interesting point. We are in a generation now of young, intense actors who are not particular, you know, the Matt Dillons, the Matthew Modines, I mean, the whole string of these guys, who nonetheless don't really bring a big kind of movie star size to the screen the way stars of another generation.
Kind of out of fashion.
Yeah.
I'll make up for it.
Or maybe a little ahead of it, that's all.
Well, who knows, you know.
Now, you had a very romantic past when you ran away to sea and went into the army and came out and went into acting. Could you tell us a little bit about that? The press release describes discipline problems as reasons for going into the army.
I've always been a clown, okay?
Uh-huh.
It takes you a while for you to realize that you've been doing that. You've been a clown and you've been rebellious against anyone, anything. A lot of anger in you, and you don't know what to do with it. And it's not an anger that, you know, goes for people. It's just anger. When you're younger, you have these, and of course, what it is that you say oh God, that's stupid. Oh God, I don't want to do that. I don't want to. It's you're always saying no. And all it is you're trying to find your own ego, your own identity. And it took me a long time.